SBC Media.
Welcome to the iGaming Daily Podcast, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market.
The subject of the surveillance of gambling operators and their customers' activities has once again crept onto the European regulatory agenda. Last week, making his final statement as outgoing chairman of KSA, the Dutch gambling regulator, Renny Jansen called for the government to allow covert agents to provide deeper surveillance of licensees and their direct engagement with consumers. Meanwhile, tighter security of gambling licenses has been called for in the markets of Spain, Sweden, and Germany, as reformists demand a centralised control of gambling operators' customers' databases. The issue has also spread to Eastern Europe, as last week the Ministry of Finance of Georgia announced that it had directly prohibited 1.5 million citizens from participating in gambling. I'm Martin Elliott, and welcome to today's edition of iGaming Daily, brought to you in partnership with Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. 56% of the EGR Power 50 personalised player experiences with Optimove. And, as a special offer, they are offering new clients a free first month when they buy Optimove. For more information and to claim the free month, go to optimove.com/SBC. Now, joining me today to discuss all things Big Brother is SBC's content director, Ted Menmuir. Hi, Ted. How are you?
Good, good. I think you should refer to me as Mr. Monday.
Mr. Monday.
Ted Monday, yes.
Yeah.
How was Romania? Tell me all about it.
It was very nice, actually. Went and did some work, which was which was good on the Monday. Had a really productive day out there with some clients. And then a little bit of a tour of Bucharest on the Tuesday, which is a beautiful city. I can highly recommend it.
It is. Outstanding architecture.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, we did the tour of Ceausescu's big palace thing. That is a truly remarkable building. That anyone thought that was a good idea is amazing.
It's on my bucket list. Like, the history of that building is mind blowing.
Yeah, it's absolutely staggering. I mean, the loads of things that come out of it, but the fact they essentially built it in 5 years from starting the design to it being habitable is incredible.
Yeah. Did Ceausescu build a podcast studio?
I think he may have been, how shall I put this, unavailable to do anything in the podcast era, having slightly annoyed the people of Romania. But a fascinating place. So we aren't sponsored by the Bucharest Tourist Board, but I can highly recommend it as a short break destination.
And if they want to pitch away, guys. You know, we're all ears.
Absolutely. So Ted, I have to ask you. I believe you cheated on me with Victor Caed last week while I was away.
I did. I got a younger dance partner to replace you.
Wow, going for the younger, better looking model. This is a. This is a terrible, terrible development from my point of view.
Well, you know, you can call yourself Mr. Tuesday now if you want.
Yeah. I'll see what I can do. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I suppose we should sort of discuss the subject a bit rather than my short break in Romania. So let's see. So this idea of sort of gambling surveillance, it's not entirely new news. It came to light last year across a number of markets. So how has the issue sort of become a bit more transparent for stakeholders in the last few weeks?
I think looking at it, it's yes and no. I think where kind of the regulators are pushing to, and it's critical that we kind of get the vocabulary right when we talk about this subject matter, is that you're going to have to differentiate it between kind of technical compliance versus kind of a centralized control. And what the regulators and not necessarily the regulators, but many kind of MPs and legal authorities want is that they want kind of a centralized control or a centralized inspection of gambling licenses. And also they want a direct obligation on kind of the reporting and bookkeeping of operators going directly to a centralized department within the government. And this is why we talk about kind of or what we link in directly with gambling surveillance.
Sure, sure. So how does that look then in terms of what Rennie Jansen was talking about in the Netherlands last week? He mentioned sort of undercover agents to monitor licenses. Now, on the face of it, that wording that you use sounds a little bit sinister, but, you know, do you think that's sort of fair practice to monitor the gambling license holders?
Well, again, this is where kind of the subject matter takes kind of a very kind of broad oversight of what can you do and what is kind of involved in the surveillance of a business, right? Like, are we talking about kind of agents coming in, testing your games? Fine. Does then gambling become like, is there going to be like a food inspector of gambling?
Yeah.
Using a fake account to check out all your games. And actually, one of the things that Jansen complained about is that the operators themselves were kind of figuring out who these agents were just because of the way that they were signing up and they were being onboarded onto the operators' websites. So it's, you know, it's one of these debates of what are kind of the boundaries of how gambling licenses are going to be inspected on, right? What is the kind of obligation on kind of customer care and who do they have to kind of report into? And yes, look, where I think there are kind of concerns on this is how is this kind of subject matter, how is it going to meander and it's going to kind of conflict on protecting the actual customer. And we're going to see kind of a higher scrutiny on like the day-to-day operations of an operator. And I think that it is, you know, it is a prominent subject matter because there are so many kind of conflicts and there are, and even in that, when you start to kind of surveil a business or its demands for kind of customer data, right? It's which are kind of the wider stakeholders involved in this practice. So it's not just the regulator. One of the things that has been talked about in the Dutch courts is that you can't implement this sort of legal oversight or surveillance oversight without any view or without any revision from required on consumer rights, consumer data practices, and also even at a bigger level. I mean, even at a European level, as you know, we are the EU are having they're revising the European data practices for businesses. So it's such a convoluted subject matter.
Sure, I mean, in the way that Rennie Jansen outlined it in his blog post, it sounded just a bit like a really advanced mystery shopper scheme to check that things were working and so on. But there's so much more in involved in it on a sort of legal basis, but also on a practical basis as well. I mean, if you think about some of the things that have been suggested, not necessarily in the Netherlands, but in other markets, you know, centralized player registries, cross-operator deposit limits, and, you know, really detailed record keeping of activity on young players, so typically sort of under 24s there. What are these measures, you know, are they technically feasible?
I think this is the great divide. I think the regulators think that they can implement this. But however, what we're seeing in Europe is that they haven't set the foundation across, you know, not just the UK, but across every market is under revision at the moment, and it is adding further layers of technical compliance. However, those technical measures have yet to be tested. In the UK, we're heading towards kind of this pilot scheme on affordability checks. And as we mentioned before, that is kind of the foundation of the foundation measure on what the next phase of protections will be built on for the whole market. And I think that's the same in a lot of European markets. Take Spain, for example. It wants to apply a cross-operator deposit limit. But again, many of the operators have said that that's just at the moment they have got no plans, or they've been given no instruction of how to apply that. So there's a lot of kind of desired practices that the regulator wants to implement, but I don't think that they've laid out kind of a clear instructions on how to get there before they can really start talking about, look, we are monitoring every level of gambling.
Sure. I mean, I think actually the in terms of the goal of, say, the cross-operator deposit limit, but also you might have a registry of player interventions. So, a player can't go and rack up four interventions at Ladbrokes and then go down the road and get four interventions at Bet365 or wherever. You know, we can spot a problem earlier. They're well-intentioned. The idea is good, but it's very difficult to imagine that there is a technical setup out there that exists that won't be prohibitively expensive to actually implement that kind of thinking. So it'd be fascinating to see what happens with that moving forward. Anyway, I think we will take a short break, and when we come back, we will look at some of the, how should we put this, moral and legal points around this surveillance debate.
SBC Leaders connects the gambling industry's top-tier operators and associations to share the best ideas, collaborate on solving the biggest issues, and push innovation throughout the betting and gaming industry. If you're an operator and want to join the discussion, visit sbcleaders.com for more information.
So welcome back to part two of today's iGaming Daily, where we are talking about surveillance of, or state surveillance or regulator surveillance of gambling operators and their customers' activities. We touched a little bit on things like practicalities before the break. What about the civil liberties aspect of this, Ted? Are the people who are calling for these measures, have they sort of ignored that outside of the argument?
I think this debate varies on a market-by-market basis. I think if we return back to Holland, you've actually got to understand the context of the revision of the co-op market. And, the Ministry of Justice is under great pressure to really, reform the market. We've seen this year that it has been attacked by a coalition of parties, and they're even demanding that it might be dropped by the end of the year. And I think that even for René Jansen calling on greater surveillance, I think that he knows that it is a law that's coming under greater scrutiny, and that it has got many, many detractors in the Kremlin. In terms of civil liberties, I mean, we even had this last week with the debate in the UK on gambling advertising. And it's that I think that as the markets are reforming, one of the issues that's been sidetracked is, what is... are we kind of infringing on people's rights to gamble and do whatever they want, what they please with their money as adults? And I think here on gambling surveillance, there's also the issue of data and what the government knows about you as a consumer. And again, this hasn't been answered at any kind of regulatory level. I don't think it's been studied enough, but even at a greater kind of European at a kind of pan-international level, at a European basis, this is giving everyone headaches. And I think this is actually the interesting part of the debate and where kind of the industry stakeholders should focus on. You know, what if you are going to implement greater surveillance, right, what is the consumer's right and the consumer's redress in this area?
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating part of the debate there. I mean, there's the obvious, the simple bits, you know, where aren't consumers allowed to spend taxed income in any way they like that is legal, I think, is one of them, without the government interfering in this, as long as you're paying the taxes and so on. But I think on a bigger level, I think the European data regulators and the various people at the Information Commissioner's Office here in the UK, they will have a problem, I think, with some of these ideas.
But the other thing to realise here is that your consumer is much more data aware now, especially since GDPR, but also they really have much greater insight about how big organisations or enterprise uses their data. And we've had kind of challenges here against, you know, your big US platforms, Facebook, Google, about how they use data to kind of advertise to people. And one thing that we know is that once a government has your data sites, it's not just the government that has your data sites, but that kind of gets spread to multiple agencies. So how is that kind of ring-fenced in the interest of the consumer? Because I wouldn't want, you know, you wouldn't want 10 or 12 organizations knowing that you gamble. And for many people, that's a private matter.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you certainly wouldn't want that going to, for example, a credit reference agency or the company that holds the lender that has your mortgage and so on.
Yes, but I mean, one of the things that I think that people forget about the consumer is that the consumer's not just thinking about gaming. He's thinking about kind of his day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And, where this kind of can get lost is that, yes, okay, like credit references happen, but they're also part of another system applied, another risk management system applied for the financial services, right? Yeah. And are we then saying that, you know, you're going to degrade any customer that places a wager? And should that really be information how you grade someone for financial assistance? So this just shows, you know, how easy it is for this kind of like spider's web just to get bigger and bigger.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the danger of something that on the face of it is a perfectly reasonable idea. You know, when you hear some of these regulators speaking about what they want to achieve, the danger of that reasonable idea really going into sort of overreach and having unforeseen repercussions in our connected world is really quite large. So something that I think the authorities, both regulators, governments and you know, consumer organizations need to think about this really carefully rather than trying to rush through some of these new laws, these new guidelines and so on. There are some, you know, hidden pitfalls, I think, along the way if they don't. I mean, if some of these things do come into play, what kind of legal oversight could we expect?
I mean, that would have to be on a case-by-case basis per jurisdiction in Europe. What we've seen in the Dutch government, again, it's referencing back, is that they will have to apply an oversight from legal protections, especially applied to the data management of anything to do with gambling surveillance, file keeping on your consumers. And I think that would be kind of replicated across multiple markets. So, you would have consumers questioning, well, look, if you want to keep my data on gambling, yeah, but I've got to have complete visibility of who owns what. What am I allowed to ask for from the government? And again, it's a process of like, yes, if this is believed to be a protection, you know, you can apply it, but the consumer has a right to seek kind of a transparency on what the protection means and how it will be applied to them.
Sure. And I think it's also important that if this does come in, consumers must have access to be able to check their data and check what records are being kept on them. Because there's a real danger in these big systems of mistakes. We've seen plenty of examples of that. And, you know, if you're keeping these records and it's going to be available, you know, to the, you know, the banking sector and all this kind of thing, this information, it has to be accurate at the very least.
Oh, yeah, so. But I mean, that would be one part of it. But, you know, you're talking about banking, health insurance.
Yeah.
Your local registries. I think if we're gonna talk about gambling surveillance, it's like who, you know, how is the consumer monitored, right? But also, it's important to understand that kind of data flow and where it spreads out to.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the most extreme point of this at the moment would be there are a number of professions which require you to have background checks and so on. Would you want your job application to be decided on how much you put on the 3:30 at Haydock at the weekend? And you probably wouldn't, would you? But I know that was a slightly facetious example, but you probably wouldn't want potential employers to be able to see your gambling habits, however small they might be. So, well, where do you see this debate around gambling surveillance heading? Because it's not something that we can expect big decisions on in a matter of weeks. It needs bigger, you know, much greater consideration than that.
I think it's going to become a more prominent subject matter because, again, you know, the governments tend to speak kind of in blurred lines of what they want. And I think that, yes, if you talk to most regulators or most lawmakers, they will want a basis of a centralized control for gambling, some form of measure. And whether that kind of corresponds to outright gambling surveillance, we don't know, but it will definitely kind of creep up in the lexicon of the gambling industry. Again, I think pointing back, like we are looking at each regulator kind of laying a kind of technical foundation for market protections, but even in that stage, I think they're going to point more towards, look, these are your new duties as operators, in record keeping, in telling us what you're doing with each individual player. And I think that, yes, we're going to have a debate on surveillance, but we also have to accept that there's going to be a debate on record keeping and data management that hasn't really been addressed by any regulator. And that kind of leaks into kind of your consumer rights and your consumer redress debate.
Sure. And, you know, we touch around a bit around what it means for players and regulators and so on. Just finally, what will operators' concerns around this be?
Put simply, just more headaches.
Yeah.
And, but again, say this, say that there is a push towards kind of greater compliance. Now, you will probably, if you are a gambling PLC, you will probably have to revise your whole kind of operational value chain. Also, how your customer services deals with the customer, your customer onboarding. So it will again be another kind of multi-million pound impact on the PLC, on the business.
Sure. I mean, it's every time you have tighter regulation or tighter requirements for data keeping and so on, ultimately is cost. These things are expensive to do, and they're expensive to do at the same time as if you don't get it right, and there's more friction for the player.
But we've already seen this kind of in PLC accounts this year, where they are reserving capital for regulatory adjustments. And again, we saw this with Entain putting 40 million aside, just in case, in case of regulatory outcomes. So the industry is kind of prepared. It's just what direction does this subject take?
Sure. Well, it'll be interesting to see. And I think this will be one of the things that you're covering on SBC News for, how shall I put this conservatively? The next couple of years, anyway. I think we're going to be writing stories about this, Ted.
Can we end the podcast?
Yes, we can. So thanks for joining me today, Ted, and thanks for listening. And we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of iGaming Daily.
Thank you for listening to today's iGaming Daily podcast, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders magazine. Happy reading.